pleasant good afternoon to you on this Thursday. It's 5 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. This is AM 1480 KAUS, also a streaming worldwide at myaustinminnesota.com and on the iHeartRadio and radio.com apps, as we right now have some sunshine and 45 degrees here at our studios in Austin. And as we were mentioning, or have been mentioning throughout the day today, time for a candidate forum here for the two candidates for the vacant seat in District 1 for the Moore County Board of Commissioners, John Mueller and Tim Duren, the two candidates for that position. Good enough to be with us here this afternoon for this forum to answer some questions and tell us more about themselves here this afternoon. So, again, we thank the candidates for being with us. They'll have up to, or we'll give their opening statements here, and then we'll, as mentioned, throw some questions at them here in this forum this afternoon. They'll have up to 4 minutes to of time to respond to those questions, and then, of course, we'll have some closing statements at the end of our forum here this afternoon. So we'll start with Mr. Mueller here. John, again, welcome. Thanks for being with us here today. And could you, as mentioned, tell us basically more about yourself and why you would like to run or like to be the commissioner in District 1 for the Moore County Board?
Yeah, and thank you for having us out here at KUS. Thank you, Jason, John, and Elaine from the Austin Chamber of Commerce. We're glad to get these opportunities, especially in the COVID environment we are in. It's a little bit more difficult to get out and about, so we do appreciate this. As far as about myself, I'm from Austin, born and raised in Austin on the South Edge. Got the opportunity to ride my bike a couple of blocks away, and I could go to my horses, or another couple blocks, I could help a farmer with chores. My wife, Dawn, and I, we've got four children, two grandchildren. All of those reside here in Moore County in the Austin area still, as does most of my family. I spent 30 years in law enforcement, just recently retiring from the Austin Police Department after about 26 and a half years there. I worked for a sheriff's department prior to that and a couple of small towns, Grand Meadow and Adams, which all of that, I think, lended to my experience in law enforcement. Most of the time that I've been in law enforcement, I've been in a leadership role. I was a policy coordinator in Fillmore County, and then when I came to Austin, my fifth year, I got promoted to sergeant investigator, and my sixth year, I went to the position of lieutenant, and that was a position that I held to the end of my career. I did do 6 months as the acting co-chief with Brian Krieger. We steered the ship for 6 months, and then a new chief was named. During my time in law enforcement, I've also been elected to several leadership roles within my department by the union, as well as outside organizations, regionally and so on, and professional organizations. I attended Blandon Foundation Leadership Program and was an inaugural participant and a longtime day leader of the Leadership Austin Program, which is put on by the folks at the Chamber of Commerce. You know, besides growing up in the city of Austin and spending a long time working in the city, I also have a wide knowledge of agriculture and the needs and the importance of more agriculture to Moore County. I've lived in Red Rock Township for nearly 27 years, served 10 years on the Red Rock Township Board. My family, we've raised hogs. We're very involved in 4-H for 20 years, mm-hmm. Raised hogs, beef cattle, a few beef cattle, and several other species. And then I own and operate a small ag business selling livestock equipment. I spent most of my life serving others from elementary school, where I volunteered to help in the special ed department, helping students there with daily school tasks. Then going on to, as an adult, 17 years on the Moore County Fair Board. And many school and civic activities throughout, especially youth activities as well. I considered running for this office in 2008, had the blessing of my boss at that time to do it, but decided not to. Just it would have taken away a lot of time from work, which at that time I also felt was unfair to my partners. So fast forward to where we are now, it's unfortunate how this opportunity came about, but the timing was right. Mm-hmm. With the unfortunate passing of Tim Gabrielson, that I did decide to throw my hat into the ring and appreciate, you know, the opportunity to have that, you know, in front of us. But I feel like I've spent most of my life preparing for a role like this as Moore County Commissioner. Mm-hmm. I've dedicated my life to community service. And hopefully on April 13th, or whether they vote in advance of that, the voters of Moore County will give me the opportunity to put my diverse experience to work for them.
All right. Thank you, John. And we'll move over to Mr. Dern. Tim, again, thanks for being with us here this afternoon. Again, tell us more about yourself and why you wish to be the next commissioner for Moore County in District 1.
Well, like John said, thank you, Jason and Johnny Lane, for putting this on once again. I guess before I answer any questions like that, it's kind of bittersweet for me to be here because, as you know, I was here again, what was it, in October, when Commissioner Gabrielson and I were sitting side by side. And, you know, for me to be here now, it's only because of his passing, and that's kind of a hard thing for me to swallow. Tim and I do know each other, and I just want to send my condolences to Mrs. Gabrielson and their family because really a person, you know, being here right now, it's pretty difficult. It really is. But I hope to, you know, fill some pretty big shoes that Mr. Gabrielson has had. As far as, you know, my background, when I was here back in October when we had this interview, you know, born and raised here. I have four children also, all grown up kind of from the East Coast to the West Coast. And yeah, I'm looking forward to running, mainly because, you know, I've been in Red Rock Township for about 7-8 years in the county, and that's the only reason, you know, you got to be in District 1 to be eligible for this position. But more so than that is I really enjoy being around people. You know, it's 63 years old today, as a matter of fact.
Well, happy birthday.
And, so it's I just like being around the people. And from last October to currently, I can't tell you how many county meetings I've been to with the councils, with the township meetings, and getting to know everybody. And it's just been overwhelming because, you know, when you walk in the door that first time, it's kind of like you're asking for a vote or just, you know, kind of introducing yourself. And now that I've been to these meetings time after time after time, it's nice to get a rapport from the people that, hi, Tim, how are you? Good to see you. And have some dialogue before and after the meeting. So my whole thing for running is I enjoy being around people, and I'm extremely concerned about what happens in the county and in the city. So I'm just looking forward to the opportunity just to continue my dialoguing with all these small towns in their commission meetings and council meetings.
All right. Thank you, Tim. And we'll stay with you here for our first question in this forum this afternoon. And you were talking about county board meetings and I guess what current issue or issues that the county board is dealing with. I think that that you would maybe list in importance or what are some of those issues that are that kind of stand out to you?
Well, I think the biggest issue that they're dealing with now is just that is the COVID crisis. You know, obviously, the board's goal is for the HHS, the Human Health Services, to continue to get enough vaccines to cover all of Moore County to the citizens that want it and actually need it. The staff at HHS, from what I can tell, have been doing a great job having this put this COVID business put on top of them amongst all their other duties. Mm-hmm. So, I think the board is really looking at kind of curtailing this COVID situation and getting as much of the shots out to the county citizens that need it and want it.
All right. Thank you, Tim. And John, same question to you here this afternoon. Of course, as mentioned with your time around the board and seeing what's going on, is there is that COVID issue or are there others that that you're seeing as kind of first and foremost right now for the board?
Well, when you talk about first and foremost, I think, right to the forefront right now would be aiding public health department. And I agree with Tim. I think Pam and that crew have done a great job getting what they call shots in arms. I think there's a real challenge to that inner rural community and county like ours. So I'd say aiding public health and distributing the COVID vaccine to those that may not have internet or have travel barriers, that's one of the challenges. I think the county board is trying to be helpful in that manner. Supporting programs that will help businesses that have been adversely affected by COVID. As you know, there's been some funding that came through to the county and was given to DCA to then get out into the hands of the businesses. And then there's always the ongoing issues, land use and environmental permits. That seems to be a hot topic at a lot of the meetings and on a lot of the agendas. But there's always issues that are always in front of the board, and they don't go away because of COVID. Mm-hmm. Issues such as taxes and budgets. They, you know, prepared the budget for 2021. And then, of course, throughout the year, they have to stay within that budget, and they do get surprises. Usually it's more a surprise of an expense, less likely than a money saved, but they have to stay within the confines of that budget and work with that. Roads and bridges, and that's a big one that's really important to me. The maintenance and the safety of those roads and bridges, there's 405 miles of highways in Mora County. I think 30 of those are gravel, the rest are blacktop, and that's a tremendous amount of maintenance for our county folks to keep up. And 369 bridges in Mora County, and Mora County is responsible for all those bridges. I know in my time on the township board, the township would pay on a township bridge, the township would pay for the first 10 feet either side of the bridge, but the county took care of building and removing and building any new bridges and the costs that come with that as well. And of course, business stability and growth, you know, we've talked about that a little bit, and then housing development comes along with that. Public safety, public health, and one that we touched on a little bit, broadband access. And again, that all ties together, because there again, you might have some very rural people that aren't getting the information or don't have the ability, for instance, to sign up for their COVID shots or know where they're even available. So I think those are ongoing issues, but certainly we have the COVID ones are at the forefront.
All right.
This time.
Okay. We'll stay with you with our next question here, John, and you kind of led into a little bit there talking about the money received or that will be received by the county here with the American Recovery Act being signed by the president. The state will be receiving $4.72 billion from the federal government, plus additional money and more targeted programs from the American Recovery Act. And of that total, $2.8 billion will go directly to state government. $2.1 billion will go to local governments in Minnesota. And last I talked with Administrator Trish Heron, the county is set to receive just shy of $7.9 million in aid to the county in its efforts to recover from COVID. I guess basically who should receive these funds or I guess how do you see that going down?
Well, in the most recent round, I know a lot of the government agencies are looking at what they can do with that money. Obviously, there's a hardship on our residents, on our businesses, and there is on the government agencies as well. I know a lot of folks are having a hard time paying their county taxes and so on. So exactly how the county will distribute those particular funds, that I don't know. I do know what has happened in the past, though, to help our local businesses. There's Federal Small Business Administration loans, SBA loans, deferred some payments for a year. Debt relief for existing loans. So if you already had a loan, they extended the payments for a year, so you didn't have to, for 6 months, so you didn't have to make those payments. In fact, they made them for you. Payment Protection Plan, this is a big one that there's been two rounds here in Mora County, two rounds of applications, and 601 businesses here in Mora County benefited from that by receiving those PPP loans. And the hope on those is that they would be forgiven once they're received. So you receive it not knowing if you have to pay it back or not, but then you can apply for the forgiveness. And I know the first round, those decisions have been made about who's going to get them forgiven or not. But again, 601 businesses in Mora County took that opportunity. And the county statistic on this that it saved for or helped protect 5,244 jobs. So that's huge when we look at the economic impact here in Mora County. And of course, there's the CARES Act, which is grants, and that was funneled from the federal to the state to the county. In this case, it was $792,000, and that's the one where the DCA was asked to administer that program. They received the applications, grants of $5,000 to $25,000, and those were awarded out with a priority on those, what I'll call hospitality businesses, and some others were also in there, but basically ones that were shut down during the restaurants or during the COVID, such as restaurants, bars, and gyms, for instance.
All right. Thank you, John. And same question to you, Mr. Duren. Again, Mora County set to receive, at last word, about $7.8 million to aid the county in its efforts to recover from COVID. They'll be getting that from the state. And I guess, again, like I said, same question to you. Is there a kind of a hierarchy as to who should be receiving these funds first in your view, or how do you see that going down?
Well, I think, like John alluded to, the fact that that's what the board commissioners are so well in tune of, In the county and in the city, as far as just taking care of their local people here in town. You know, they're certainly talk all the time about support of your local businesses here in town, and going around and qualifying for some of these, you know, the PPP loan and the CARES Act loan. And I think we just got $700,000+ that kind of was dispersed between some hotels in the city and some restaurants. And they all had to be qualified, you know, for this, of course. But, you know, here again, the county board is doing everything they possibly can, among all their other duties they have, Jason, trying to get all the businesses in town, the motels in town, everything possible to get them back and running again. The support from the county is unbelievable. With the times that I've been to the meetings, it really is. They're just going beyond the call of duty, if you will, just to help as many of the people in town here as they possibly can, and in the county.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, all right. Thank you for that, Mr. Dern. And Tim, we'll stay with you here for our next question this afternoon in this forum. And we briefly touched on this: road and bridge repair in Moore County always seems to be a main issue for the board. How much more can be done locally with what seems to be chronic underfunding of road and bridge repairs by the state of Minnesota?
Well, that's an ongoing problem. I mean, you know, you're getting, you know, the county board here looked at on their levy to try and keep that as close to zero as they possibly can from year to year, and they went up 0.5%, I believe, this year. And I think, by and large, I think if, you know, they would like to have kept it to a zero, but 0.5% isn't very much when you look at, I think, the city raised theirs maybe around 4%. The schools may be a little higher than that. So here again, the county is really looking at how they can protect, or the board is really looking at how they can protect the county with not putting any more burden on their backs with raising the levy. I mean, the problem, you know, part of the problem is there's so many unfunded mandates that come down from the state that have to be taken right out of our budget. And, you know, if the state could look at maybe a little bit of watching their own budget a little bit more carefully, we wouldn't have these obstacles down here and all around the country, from that matter. But, yeah, we got to be really cognizant of being careful of what comes down from the state and our concerns with, you know, bridges and roads and culverts and things like that, because that can really upset the apple cart when you look at, you know, a culvert goes out, for example. Mm-hmm. Well, then that really deters the farmers from getting their product to market. A bridge goes out. That really, you know, interferes with emergency calls. So you got to look at, I think, from the standpoint of bridges and roads, take the worst one that we have, for example, the one that needs the most attention to the least amount of attention, and go from there and just kind of work towards the middle. But in the same time, just be really careful with budget dollars, how they're being spent.
Sure. All right. Thank you, Tim. And Mr. Mueller, same question to you. Road and bridge repair in Moore County, as we've touched on, always seems to be a main issue for the board. How much more can be done locally with, again, what seems to be chronic underfunding of road and bridge repairs from the state of Minnesota?
Well, if you look at the Moore County budget for 2020, I'm sorry, I'm going to go back to 2020 because I did not get specifically for 2021. As Tim said, they did the levy at 0.5%, which is pretty remarkable, all things considered. But if you look at this street and highway funding in 2020, we're at $5.5 million. The only one higher than us was Freeborn County, and when I look at comparable counties. Otherwise, we're right in with everybody else. So they are dedicating funds to it. I know in 2021, there's going to be $2 million from the windmill tax, the wind energy tax, mm-hmm. that's going to be directed toward Moore County highways and bridges. So that's going to be helpful as well. Moore County does take steps to protect their roads, such as road postings. I can tell you, as a guy that's been driving a semi since 1988, and I've hauled through a lot of farmers, road postings are incredibly frustrating to people trying to move large commodities or large amounts of commodities, such as our farmers. But they're also necessary in order to protect the integrity of those roads. So Mike Hansen and his crew, they go out and they road test and do the things they need to know how good a road is, and that's how they establish the weight limits on those roads. I'm sure a lot of people have seen them. They go on, I think they went on about a week and a half or 2 weeks ago, and they'll probably be on till early May, I would guess. Again, that's to protect those roads because they don't want to overrun them with weight and so on and have them deteriorate sooner than they should. So it's kind of a give and get, protect the roads with the weight restrictions, but you save money by not having to fix them quite so soon. So having said that, you know, with the $2 million that's going to go toward from the windmill tax, that's going to be helpful. But it's an incredible amount of roads. Like I said, there's 405 miles and 470 or 375 are blacktop. That's a lot of roads for one department to maintain. Mm-hmm. The safety and maintenance of those roads is a primary concern to me. Mm-hmm. I will tell you, my kids used to travel at 6 o'clock in the morning to go to school for preschool events. I should say events prior to class starting, and they don't come home till 8 o'clock because they have practice for something else. And I always worried about road conditions, especially, you know, in the dark, and snow removal is a big one also. I would mm-hmm. like to see snow plows out getting the road safe. And I know they do what they can with what they have, but it's not always just about the road construction. Sometimes it's the road maintenance, and that includes snow removal. So I'm glad to see budgetarily we're in the ballpark with everybody else, and they've found some creative ways to move money from other sources over without taking away from anything, and that'd be that windmill tax.
All right. All right, thank you for that, John. And Tim kind of touched on our next question here this afternoon just a short time ago about unfunded mandates. Unfortunately, quite a few of them from the state of Minnesota. Is there anything that can be done, John, do you think, about slowing them down, if that's possible?
Well, I think it's like an open faucet, to be very honest, and I think Mora County only has two services that they provide that wouldn't be considered mandated, and those are your 4-H extension, the extension from with the University of Minnesota. That's an agreement that's not mandatory. It was actually debated a couple of years ago. Unfortunately, they put that back in, so that gives us a strong 4-H program. I think there's over 400 kids enrolled in that throughout the entire county. And the other one is, it's called GIS. It's a mapping service. I know that's heavily used by our engineers and our assessors and environmental services. Again, it's not a necessary thing, but I've used GIS myself in my law enforcement career. It actually can be used in many things, not just by the engineers. So those are the only two that we face or use here that are not mandated. But I think mandates kind of come down to two things. They're either service-driven or procedural-driven. Service meaning you got to provide the service. Procedural is you have to do it in a certain way, document it, audit it, whatever those steps might be. And those are the two big ways that mandates come down the pipe. But they all cost us locally, as Tim said, comes out of our local purse here of money, and that's taxpayer money. But the purpose in them is to keep the services consistent from county to county. So you don't go to one county and you have wonderful services and go to another county and you don't have any because they didn't want to fund them. So it helps keep us more whole as a state. But the downside of that is it does eliminate some local autonomy, it limits it at least, and it strains local budgets, as we all know. So unfunded mandates are really difficult. I think to address them, and I will tell you this is something that I have looked at for a long time and has been a frustration for me, I think to address them, I think we need to, as they come up, or even if you get time to review them, find out which ones really make sense. We all know there's laws and policies that are on the books that are just no longer relevant. So maybe we can get rid of some that way. I think we have to build great relationships with our local representatives, Gene Dornick and Patricia Mueller, no relation, by the way, and work with other counties and lobbying groups. That's why we're a member of the Minnesota Counties Association, and they have lobbyists that go out and fight for us as counties. And I think if we can partner with some of those other folks and utilize some of those services, that we could maybe start either getting rid of or at least changing some of those unfunded mandates.
All right. Thank you, John, for that answer. And Tim, same question to you here this afternoon about the unfunded mandates from the state. Is there anything that can be done in your view about slowing them down?
Well, I mean, that's a great question, Jason, and we're looking at that on a yearly basis. You know, as an example of an unfunded mandate, you know, back in 1996, Congress passed a safety law for automobiles to install certain safety features in cars to comply with the new law. Well, there was no money given for those changes in the cars that they had to make, and so the automakers had to deal with that and pass along that expense to us. And so that's kind of just what happens in local government too. These unfunded mandates come down, and if it's not expected and it's got to be taken out of our budget, and then somewhere, somehow, we've got to do some cutting. And that's not something that we're real fond of doing. And it's a learning process. You know, getting on the board here on April 13th, it's going to be a learning process for whoever gets that position, because you just learn more about where they're going and what they're doing and what's all involved in the mandates and who it really all affects. But unfunded mandates are a big problem, no doubt about it.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Tim. And Mr. Dern, we'll stay with you here for our next question this afternoon. That kind of regards the budget for the county and increases in the past, especially when we're still dealing with the effects of COVID on businesses. And we kind of touched on this here earlier, that the levy just increased, I think it was about 0.5% to here, or it was very minuscule for the county, the levy increase, because considering COVID. But I guess, you know, looking into your crystal ball, if you are elected on April 13th, how do you maybe see that going down when the budget is determined?
Well, it's going to be an interesting thing, because right now it's all predicated and everything is geared towards COVID. Like I alluded to just a few minutes ago, the county has kept their budget at a minimal of the 5%, 0.5%. And so, I mean, they're doing everything, Jason, they possibly can. Not to have small businesses, large businesses, homeowners, county people, landowners, farmers, you know, create any more hardships than they have right now, because COVID has taken such a hit just with everybody. So I think it's all just kind of based and looked at on how can we keep taxes to a minimum, expenses to a minimum, yet let our businesses, small and large, try and thrive. And like I said earlier, I said it's, you know, it's got to be the support of us right here in our own county to support those businesses. And rather than going out of town, let's keep everything we possibly can here to get everything back on the upswing.
All right. Thank you, Tim. And Mr. Mueller, same question to you here about the county's budget and increases in the levy, especially dealing with the COVID and effects on businesses. And again, if looking into the crystal ball, if you're elected on April 13th, do you think the board will be able to keep that levy increase, I guess, where it was here this last year, or would it have to be increased? How do you maybe see that shaking down?
Well, I think the budget is impacted or affected by a lot of outside factors, including increased expenses, which could be payroll and benefits, construction costs. You know, just look recently, just in the last several months, the cost of construction has just skyrocketed. Mm-hmm. And who knew that last year when they were setting budgets? Roads and bridges we already talked about, but, you know, those are a big factor. And then, of course, capital outlay, equipment, road graders, buildings, whatever those might be. So there's a lot of those kinds of things that can affect your increased expenses. And, of course, then you have to look at your increase or decrease of any income. Mm-hmm. And these are all things that are looked at before they even look at what the tax levy should be, or how much of it should be paid by tax. But you have just this last year, coming into 2021, Mora County lost a tremendous amount of money on the gas tax. It's the county state aid highway tax. And that rate changed, and because of the rate change, we received quite a bit less money, we as a county. State aid, there's general aid, there's special project aid, those can be affected. If you get less of them, then where does the money come from to maintain the standards we already have in place? And of course, federal aid, and then charges for services, fees, permits, that last one the county probably does have the control of, or the most control of. This past year, part of the reason that the county board, and I think they did a phenomenal job staying at a 0.5% levy increase, it just doesn't happen very often like that. But part of that was the valuation of our property. If you remember, I'd have to look back and say maybe 5-6 years ago, I think there was a pretty big swing to commercial property in Mora County. So all of a sudden, a lot of the folks with commercial property were seeing an increase in their taxes, and then it became ag land. Ag land started selling for $13,000, $14,000 an acre. Well, all of a sudden, that became a bigger tax then. And then, and not necessarily the percentage went up, but it was generating more tax. And we just saw that now in the housing market. Housing market is extremely tight. Most houses, to be very honest, my daughter's been house shopping for a couple of months, and a lot of them she'd find out about in the morning and was gone by the end of the day. They're moving that fast. Well, with that demand, the prices of houses went up, and with that, there's been a real tax shift into residential. So I'd say in the last 10 years, we've seen it go from commercial to ag to residential. But with that, that means you don't have to increase the percentage, but you are going to generate more income because it's now valuable, more valuable than it was. So with that swing in the tax, I think that's helped maintain only that 0.5%. I think, you know, something that we can look at going in the future is obviously these CARES programs are going to help. And then I think locally we can also look at what can we do as far as the fees, permits, and those sorts of things. Can we help local businesses maybe in a reduction of them or to put them off for a year? You know, I think there's conversations to be had what we can do locally with the things that are under our control.
All right. Well, thank you, John. We come to the part of the program now where we'll take the closing statements from each of the candidates here for this position and why they think they should be the new commissioner for Moore County in District 1. And John, we'll start with you here this afternoon.
Okay. Well, it won't be greatly different than what I said in the beginning, other than, like I said, I grew up here in the city of Austin. After about 26 years, moved out into the country and have been a rural resident since for like almost the last 27 years, I guess. And so I do have that city tie, that city connection. My family still lives around here, family in town, family out of town, but a lot of family in and around Austin and Moore County as a whole. Been involved in the community since I was a kid. 17 years on the county fair board, 10 years on Red Rock Township. I think that's important because that gives that rural connection. I know how to work with rural government. I know what the township needs can be. In my township role too, we accomplished a pretty big project on some clean water in the Dobbins Creek area, and that took a lot of communication and working with other folks from state, county, active groups that are about clean water. So I think it's important to know how to do that, and I have that experience. Again, 30 years in law enforcement, most of that in a leadership role. My peers trusted in me to put me into leadership of organizations as well. And been involved in my local school district and the kids there and helped on different committees and that type of thing. I just think I bring a vast amount of diverse experience. Most of my experience have been long-time commitments. And I'm now retired. I have the time and the will to do this for the residents and businesses and farmers of Moore County. And I would appreciate their vote, whether they vote early by absentee or the current mail-in ballots or on April 13th. I would like to put my experience to work for all of you in Moore County.
All right. Thank you, John. And we'll move over to Mr. Dern and Tim, your closing statement here for us this afternoon and why you think you should be the new commissioner in Moore County District 1.
Well, again, I appreciate your guys' time out here at KUS 1480. And, you know, since October of last year, I could probably count on one hand how many meetings versus in the township meetings or the county council meetings that I've missed. And like I alluded to earlier, Jason, I have really gained a good rapport with these people on their boards. And I think that the biggest thing is, you know, relationships are everything. Going to these meetings as your county commissioner is invaluable. I've been to a lot of the meetings, like I've said, and I've asked, I said, how often do you expect your commissioner to be at these meetings, or what's really the protocol? And a lot of them have looked at each other on the board and said, well, you know, we didn't see our county commissioner very often. And for whatever reason that was, maybe they were busy. I don't know what the reasoning was. But I said, well, I said, you are going to see me on a regular basis. You know, I don't care when the meeting is, I'm going to be at the meetings. Unless there's something where I'm out of town or where they just can't make it because of work-related. But you are going to see me at these meetings because that's how dialogue begins. when you have a question and I'm sitting in the audience and you have the question for me, maybe I can answer it, but at least you know that if I can't answer it, I'll get back to you. And that's the kind of rapport that I'm seeing from these board members when I go to these meetings, is that they really appreciate the fact that that I'm there. And I told them, I said, you know, every meeting that I've been to, I said, there hasn't been one time that I've asked for your vote. Now, one time did I ask for your vote. I'm just here to tell you that if I get elected, I'm going to be here representing District 1 to its fullest. A lot to learn, a ton of stuff to learn. Mr. Gabrielson had 12 years on that board. I would love to have just picked his brain and just to see some things. I can't do that, so it's going to be a big learning curve, no doubt about it. But one of the things that I've alluded to these people to is trust. I said, you can trust me beyond a shadow of a doubt. No, I don't have anything in my closet I need to worry about. I'm here to help you. I'm here to do everything I can to make your job easier as a board member. So come April 13th, whether it's myself or whether it's John, I'm going to do a very good job for you, so I just appreciate that.
All right. Well, Tim and John, thank you so much for being with us here this afternoon on AIM 1480 KUS, both coming out here. Lots of fantastic information that you were able to share with the voters in District 1. And again, thank you so much both for your time at coming out here and being with us here this afternoon. And as both just mentioned, of course, please execute your constitutional right and get out there and vote to be either in person on April the 13th, or again via absentee, or for your mail-in district as well. And Tim and John, thanks so much for your time here this afternoon. Again, thank you both so much for coming out here, and best of luck to you both. Thank you.